Craig Bush in the chair, 27 minutes to 8 on ABC Gippsland. How difficult is it to really work as a team? How many workplaces realise their full potential with everyone pulling in the same direction? Last time Malcolm Dawes was on the program, he gave us some great hints about public speaking, so I'm hoping he can help me learn how to get on with others in a work environment. Good morning to you, Malcolm.
Good morning, Craig. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. And thank you for finding time to speak to us in your busy schedule, because I believe you are volunteering this morning.
I am indeed, yes. I'm sitting at a fire station in Sydney, New South Wales, about to do a hazard reduction if this rain stays away.
You've got rain?
We've got a tiny bit I woke up to this morning, but the rest of my fiery colleagues are looking up to the sky, keeping their fingers crossed, hoping these pretty small clouds will go away.
We have our fingers crossed with a completely different scenario in mind. But anyway, Malcolm, for years I've been a solo operator, and recently I've had to learn how to be part of a team. And it's not easy, is it?
It isn't, no. And it's one of those things I have a great passion about, which is trying to help people to work together more effectively in teams. And I think, people get put together from random walks of life and cultures and backgrounds and are expected to work together, but very often it doesn't happen that way. And indeed, just listening there to your team, seems that somebody didn't do the right thing by putting the wrong track on.
Absolutely. I'm determined that heads will roll.
Indeed. And I sometimes think, well, you know, whilst that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, I hope, it's often I find, teamwork starts with the team leader, perhaps, but it also is incumbent on everybody within the team. And I think, you know, there's a sort of set of ground rules, one of which is try not to have blame. It's very easy to point the finger at other people and say it was their fault. And without going into any detail, in a recent sporting case where a sporting captain from an Australian team said it was the leadership's fault. And I almost felt like there should be a big hand coming from the sky pointing at him when he said that, and because he was indeed the leadership. So I think good teamwork starts with good leaders, but it's also, as I say, incumbent on the rest of us to understand how to get on with each other.
Talking of that, different personality types, how does one deal with people with whom one has to work who have a completely different personality type?
That's an excellent question, and I think we all have different personality types. And I think one of the things, first of all, is to understand that when somebody says something or does something and you think they're just being difficult, is to recognise, firstly, that actually they're not being difficult. I believe, perhaps naively, that nobody gets out of bed in the morning to go to work to annoy other people, but by virtue of the fact we're all different and have different personalities, we do. So I think point number one is to recognise that people are different rather than difficult. The second thing is to understand that we do have different behaviours. And you only need to look around when you're working with friends or colleagues in a team. Some people are sort of quite direct, tell you what to do, tell you what they've done for the weekend, maybe fairly verbose and tell you lots of things. And then there are other people who are much more quiet and perhaps almost look as if they don't want to belong to the team and prefer to work alone. Either of those traits is neither right nor wrong. They're just different. So I think one of the things is, in the absence of, you know, going on to courses and all sorts of things, is to understand that, you know, some people are what I call direct and other people are indirect. Similarly, there are those people who are quite reserved, keep themselves to themselves, don't use much body language, so it's difficult to work out perhaps sometimes what they actually mean. And then there, on the other end of that scale, there are those people that are very open. And those people are very usually sort of warmer, friendlier people. And then, of course, when you combine that sort of direct behaviour and that open behaviour, you get certain groupings. And if you can understand what those groupings are and what the key behaviours are, and indeed that some of them are opposite, then you begin to understand how to change your behaviour towards that of somebody else for better outcomes.
So the reserved person, Malcolm, we're talking to Malcolm Dawes about workplaces and how a team in a workplace might work more effectively. The reserved person, Malcolm, may be contributing every bit as much as the loudest.
Absolutely, and in fact, there's another word I often associate with people who are reserved, and that is that they tend to be more task-focused. So you're right. Mm. They're not necessarily and rarely are the loudest. And in fact, there are two groups of reserve people. There are what I call the reserved and indirect people. And those reserved indirect people are very good at problem solving. They keep themselves to themselves. They're logical, methodical, structured. And give them a task and they'll quietly beaver away and get it done. They won't make a noise. And probably be preferred to be left alone. They don't want to talk about the footy or last night's TV program or politics. They just want to get on with it. And the other group are what I call the reserved and direct people. So they still have this task orientation, this desire to get things done and to work, but they get things done in a more, I suppose they're more results-focused, they're more objective. They like to be in control. That doesn't mean to say necessarily they're the best leaders, but they do like to take control a little bit more. But yes, they're neither of those groups of people are the loudest by far.
The other style of people, and again, it's a generalisation, but Generation Y people can be interesting to work with if you're of a different era?
Yeah, indeed. And I often talk to people who specialise in the generations and the Gen Ys and the millennials and the baby boomers. And I think whichever generation comes along, we all have a particular desire and all have a particular way of wanting to be managed or to be sort of treated, if you like. But it all boils down to, again, the fact that we do have these behaviours. And I think culturally and certainly, excuse me, in a Western society, things are slightly different, and over the last 10 or 15, 20 years, we've seen the rise of all sorts of clever gadgetry and devices, which I actually think the millennials use a lot more, and that also means that their communication isn't as good. I could tell you a very quick story, which has just popped into my head, about a millennial that I was working with fairly recently. We did an activity. Have you got time for me to tell you the story?
Yes.
We were doing an activity which essentially was to get a group of millennials who were salespeople, actually, to find a group of fictitious customers across a hotel sort of resort area. They were at a conference and I'd been asked to do some work. And we'd put together this plan, so they had to go to different rooms and knock on doors. And this resort was spread out indoors and outdoor sort of area. And all they had to do was find the customer, sit down and sell their wares. And at the end of the exercise, one of the salespeople said, "I couldn't find this particular customer. I couldn't find that one." And I said, "Well, what did you do? And what would you do in the real world?" And he said, "Well, I would look at Google."
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay, so what would you do if Google wasn't working in the real world?" And he shrugged his shoulders and said, "I don't know." So it didn't occur to him to speak to somebody and say, "Excuse me, can you tell me where room 641 is?" So, it didn't occur to him to go to the reception of the hotel and say, "Can you tell me how to get to so-and-so?" It was amazing, and it really brought home to me the fact that, you know, we have a generation now and generations to come will not know. I fear that people won't know how to communicate, how to talk, how to ask a question of somebody, because they're so reliant upon Google and other devices to sort of get them through the day.
It's a fair comment that people whose phones don't work can often feel disempowered.
Yeah, indeed, and I think, you know, again, within the team, teams should rely on each other and should support each other and work together. And but when we're all reliant on a non-human, you know, an Android, let's say, or even an Apple device, then that sort of communication, it becomes secondary, and therefore when teams don't work together, which is often what I see, it's because they don't know how to communicate, they don't understand the different behaviours, they don't recognise that people are different and just think that people are being difficult. And then there's also the passing of the buck. When a team player isn't very good and the manager or leader hasn't done a good enough job to improve their performance, I also know stories where people get passed on to another manager. You know, one manager sort of brushes their hands in glee and says, "That's the end of that person, but I've handed my problem on to somebody else." And that's not teamwork either.
Malcolm, we have about a couple of minutes to go before the news. You've written a book, Team Performance, Why Can't We All Get Along? What's the key messages within that book?
Well, the key messages really, Craig, are there's 10 messages, I guess, which are myths that people have about working in teams. things like, let's all go out and do some team building, play some 10-pin bowling, or build the Eiffel Tower out of chewing gum and string, cross a river in a raft. All those things are designed to build teams and bring them closer together, for example, but often they're competitive in nature, and they actually have the opposite effect. Similarly, people do various things. They do profiling and assessments and so on, and then they wear what I call a badge of honour. They say, well, I've got this behavioural style, and you've just got to get used to it. Well, that's not what it's about at all. So the message there really is, understand people have different behaviours. Know that different people like to be motivated in very different ways, not just by the way that the team leader likes to be motivated, and try to build a team by getting them to understand the person rather than pit them against each other in competitive nature.
Okay, great to have your expertise, and I imagine there's a number of people who are thinking as we speak that, there are ways that I could approach people differently that I've not tried. And I think if you've got people thinking along those lines, we've achieved something.
Well, that's good, Craig. Thank you very much indeed.
That's Malcolm Dawes joining us this morning. He helps teams, building teams in workplaces. And that book is called Team Performance, Why Can't We All Get Along? Malcolm Dawes, Dawes.